If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the Abraham Lincoln Radio Studio at the George Washington Broadcast Center,
Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
In the fallout of his scathing public commentary about NPR, Berliner wrote in the Free Press, quote, "It is true NPR has always had a liberal bent, but during most of my tenure here, an open-minded, curious culture prevailed. We were nerdy, but not knee-jerk, activist, or scolding. In recent years, however, that has changed." In response, Editor-in-Chief Edith Chapman said she strongly disagreed in a memo to staff obtained by Fox, quote, "We're proud to stand behind the exceptional work that our desks and shows do to cover a wide range of challenging stories. We believe that inclusion among our staff, with our sourcing, and in our overall coverage is critical to telling the nuanced stories of this country and our world."
Wow, that was a lot of gobbledygook. Inclusion is precisely what you don't do at NPR.
If you don't know the story, a guy that's been at NPR forever has come out and laid bare some of the things that most of us knew or suspected about NPR, and now he's gone.
Yuri Berliner, 25 years, mostly on the business desk there. Among the other things he wrote in the Free Press, back in 2011, that's just 2011, NPR's audience tilted a bit to the left. 26% of listeners described themselves as conservative, 23% as middle of the road, and 37% as liberal. By 2023, only 11% described themselves as very or somewhat conservative, 21% as middle of the road, and 67% of listeners said they were very or somewhat liberal. Then he mentions that the home office in Washington, D.C. had, was it 87 registered Democrats and zero Republicans?
See, that's
87 to zero. That's the sort of inclusion you can expect at NPR.
If your goal is to be a liberal news outlet in the way that Fox is a conservative outlet, I suppose that's okay. I still don't think it's a good idea. But if your stated goal is to be nonpartisan, fair down the middle, especially because you're taxpayer funded, come on.
Well, you can do anything you want if you're privately financed, but they're getting taxpayer money. So, no, you don't get to be a radical force for progressivism with my tax dollars. That's extremely frustrating and inappropriate. Jonathan Turley had a comment on this. Then we'll hear from Yuri Berliner himself. 85, Michael.
It's an ironic moment. He said, look, there's no viewpoint tolerance at NPR. And he said that publicly. And so they suspended him. But, you know, the larger problem here is that he was really articulating something many of us have written for years, that NPR has radically changed. And many people had hoped that the new CEO would be an opportunity to bring in someone that was a traditional journalist, someone who would say, look, we need to tack towards the middle, particularly because we're a publicly supported media organization. Instead, they picked someone who was pretty far left and fairly activist, and the situation has gotten even worse.
So Yuri Berliner said, hey, this is not good journalism, what we're doing here. This is just radical activism. And he was calling for, openly, with his name signed, hey, let's get better at our jobs. And for that, he was suspended for 5 days, I think it was, and he has resigned. Jack, I thought you said you thought he should have stuck it out.
I thought I'd heard he was fired, but he may have been, in effect, fired. If you get suspended for that many days, and I mean, depending on what his meetings were like or what the mood was like there, I mean, how are you going to stick around?
Yeah, I think he thought he would be a pariah.
Right.
Plus, they made it infinitely clear they were not going to change a thing. And so he, in a principled way, said, all right, that's fine. I'm not working here anymore. I think that's
pretty
fine.
Bold move on his part.
Let's hear the gentleman's words from his own mush, number 80. Michael, we'll start there.
At one point, I got so frustrated with what I saw was the sort of the lack of different perspectives in our coverage that I decided to look at voter registration. 87 registered Democrats on our editorial staff. Zero Republicans. I presented this at a all hands or a large news meeting, and I said, "Hey, look, something's gone wrong here."
Here he is describing more of the issue on Barry Weiss's Fine podcast.
Do you see NPR and its shift to the left as sort of singular to that organization or of a piece with a much broader trend that's happening inside legacy media institutions?
It's much broader within a legacy media organization. I think it's very commonplace. For me, what's different about NPR is we are a public service institution. We have a public mission, and we have a show called All Things Considered. We have a fellowship called the Reflect America Fellowship. So I think we have a particular obligation to reflect America, to understand people from all different outlooks, to bring up things that might be uncomfortable for our progressive audience members, to be a little more daring, to take a little more chance, to be more curious about things that don't fit the narrative. So I think at NPR, it was a particular problem because we're a public institution. And you know, for years, I think a lot of people felt NPR was like a national trust.
Whatever. I never felt that way. But I know plenty of people because I live in a liberal college town that just feel like you're being a good American by getting your news from NPR because they're down the middle, fair, all things considered, wide variety.
You're delusional.
By the way, I listen to NPR every day. They're great. One of the reasons they're great is that first of all, they got plenty of time with no commercials because we're paying. They don't need commercials, and they have just a different business structure for the sort of talent and time and money they can put into stories, and they get great ratings everywhere because of that. But the idea that it's a public trust and it's okay that they use taxpayer money because they're being fair, give me a break.
Well, the examples he gave, the Reflect America thing and All Things Considered, are the opposite of what's happening. And you would think, I mean, there's no way a moral person could argue with the point he was making. I mean, that was clearly 100% correct. But that gets to the heart of the problem. The people running the place don't see it as that anymore. They have decided they have a better idea, which, again, is fine. You can advocate for the violent overthrow of the government in favor of a government of clowns, which we kind of have right now. I mean, you can advocate for anything you want as long as my tax dollars aren't involved. Here is one more clip of Mr. Berliner.
You know, I've been at NPR a long time, 25 years. You could say I'm a lifer. And it's a place I've always loved working. But when I started, there was a liberal orientation, but I think we were more guided by curiosity, open-mindedness. You know, you said, talked about policy. We were kind of nerdy and really like to dig into things and understand the complexity of things. That I think that's evolved over the years into a much narrower kind of niche thinking, a group think that's really clustered around
very selective progressive views that don't allow enough air, enough spaciousness to consider all kinds of perspectives.
Well, here's a couple.
Ich bin ein Berliner. I am a jelly donut.
Here's a couple of things all you need to know in case you don't listen to NPR. They use the term Latinx. Okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you need to know anything more than that? Or you might regularly hear pronouns thrown around if somebody's being introduced or introducing themselves. And I've told this story three times now. It was just so astounding to me a couple of weeks ago when I was listening to their coverage of the Israel-Hamas war. And somebody brought up, some people say, they're talking about the hospitals being bombed. Some people say Hamas uses the hospitals as a base to cover. That has been thoroughly debunked at this point. Oh, okay. They moved on. So that's all you need to know about that. And then just from the arts part, and I really like it. I love this, a lot of the stuff they do. But they will spend 5 minutes talking about Wynton Marsalis' new jazz album. They don't do Luke Combs' new album or Kid Rock's new album. Some indie band, you know, from somewhere that kind of does college kid stuff. Yeah. But mainstream stuff that most people listen to, even though it's their tax money keeping them afloat, not a chance.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure I need 15 minutes on Kid Rock's new album.
Well,
but
I don't either. But don't pretend that you're serving everybody with the things you're into.
Oh, speaking of that sort of thing, it's funny. I was just glancing at the computer screen here and a news alert came up from Vox.com, which is so left. It was the Supreme Court decision that could criminalize homelessness explained.
Oh, so this is the Grants Pass Supreme Court has taken up the Grants Pass homeless thing. Which one is that?
Oh, gosh, I get confused. It's very similar to the Boise decision that you can't boot people off the street unless you have a shelter bed for them.
We've been wanting this for a long time. The Supreme Court's finally going to look at this. This could be huge.
Yeah, you've got that. You got the over-prosecution of January 6th trespassers. Not talking about people who fought cops. There could be some serious blows for the good done by the court today.
But so it's
this session, I should say.
Monday is the arguments for the Grants Pass homeless thing that those of us in West Coast cities particularly have been waiting for something to be done. I mean, it's just insane. What was the headline there from Vox?
The Supreme Court decision that could criminalize homelessness.
How about criminalize drug addicts sleeping on the street in front of my business? I'd be fine with criminalizing that.
It is criminalized, or it was, for all of human history. Here's a crazy coincidence. Grants Pass, lots and lots of bums and junkies, and a terrible meth problem. Lots of homeless people and lots of meth. Lots of meth. And lots of... could it be this is a drug problem? Ugh.
We got so much more on the way.
Well, speaking of meth, Chinese government is funding and paying tax rebates to fentanyl producers, according to a new House report. Chinese government is not only permitting fentanyl production and shipping to the U.S., they're funding it.
Now, come on, China!
I got more things to say, but we don't have time.
So don't say them.
It's probably a good
idea.
Hold
your tongue. Be thought a fool, etc.
Here's my favorite quote that I use behind the scenes. John Coltrane was playing too long of solos in Miles Davis's band. And John Coltrane said, I just can't stop once I get going. How do I stop? And Miles Davis said, take the horn out of your mouth. So that's what I try to do when I'm going too long. I'll take the horn out of my mouth and stop talking. We'll be back right after this.
Armstrong and Getty.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if you... No. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Israel vowing to respond. That response is expected to be limited, and the Israelis have told the U.S. they will retaliate very carefully. Israel's war cabinet meeting behind closed doors for a third consecutive day, but no final decision over how and when to retaliate. Officials say that there has to be some sort of response to that unprecedented Iranian attack, and analysts telling us it could be covert, but it's likely to have a light footprint.
So that open source Twitter feed that I follow said Arab officials have stated that Israel assured them and other Middle Eastern countries yesterday that their retaliatory strike against Iran wouldn't endanger regional security and would likely be limited in scope, with Israel stating that it will also likely warn their regional allies before a strike against Iran were to occur.
Huh.
Arab officials say. So they're primarily probably telling Jordan, Saudi Arabia, look, we're not going to go crazy here. It's not going to cause giant. We'll give you a heads up, which I find interesting. I continue to not know exactly what the right move is, but I was thinking about this yesterday. I mean, this was a declaration of war by a major country against a neighbor who they've been vowing to eliminate forever, and the rest of the world's response is don't respond. Take the win. Has that ever happened one time, even kind of, in world history? Like if Japan had somehow missed Pearl Harbor, or we'd have shot those planes out of the sky. Take the win. They've declared they want to attack you. They took their best shot, but they weren't successful. Take the win. I don't know. Has this ever happened?
No, in a word. It's a bizarre notion. And it speaks to the utter dishonesty of our politics, I think, and at least speaking for this country.
The only argument that makes sense to me toward Israel not responding much or at all is they're twofold. One, they already got a war going on with Hamas. That keeps being forgotten. They were fully at war with Hamas, which, of course, is run by Iran, so they're tied together. But they got to go into Rafah and clear out the rest of those Hamas. And they got everybody that's eligible fighting right now and not getting many days off and
having half a war with Hezbollah in the north as well.
Right. So that's ongoing. It's not like that giant problem and how to feed the Palestinian people and world opinion and all that. It's not like that giant problem went away Saturday when Iran attacked. So you've got that. And then just how solid is this behind the scenes normalizing with Saudi Arabia? I mean, if you're this close to normalizing with the biggest counterweight to Iran in the region, it might be worth not interrupting.
Yeah, I agree completely. The complexities of the foreign policy aspect of this are really interesting to me. Also interesting is the domestic set of challenges we have, in that the opposition for Israel's efforts, their existence in some cases, is coming from a certain demographic, a couple of different demographics in America, college students who have no idea what they're talking about, and Muslim Americans, almost entirely. The reason I'm thinking about this so much is that's one of our most important and long-lived alliances, certainly in the region. And our president, who has advocated for that alliance his entire career, now granted he's spineless and phony, but is now waffling seriously on that commitment and asking for something bizarre and unprecedented, take the win, don't strike back, because we have a hell of a lot of immigrants and folks of a certain faith who are saying, you know, it's like there was a small but significant German-American Bund, it was called, back in the 1930s, who were saying, hey, Hitler's doing a lot of good stuff. He's reorganizing Germany. The Brits are the aggressors in this. You got to go easy on Herr Hitler and his government. Give him a chance. They're good fellers. There are obviously differences between the two movements and the two groups of people, but it's interesting that our most honored alliances are being openly betrayed, not supported for those reasons.
Here's my favorite dumb thing from yesterday. Brown University, that's an Ivy League school if you don't know. Their anthropology department yesterday put out a statement. The most important thing President Biden can do for the climate is enforce an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. The impact of military emissions on the climate is paramount. So the anthropology department at an Ivy League wants to stop the war in Gaza because of climate change. All right.
Where do you even start?
Armstrong and Getty.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Recognize the melody. Here we go. Yeah! Ozzy. It's an elementary xylophone band.
Nice!
Playing Crazy Train by Ozzy Osbourne. God, I remember. Nah, I shouldn't say this. I won't
say it. I'll say this then. I remember vividly and so fondly elementary school music classes with my fabulous teacher, Ms. Constantine. And we would bring out xylophones and we would learn our parts and play in an ensemble like that. And it gave me such a passion for music. Mm. Loved it.
Yeah.
Good times.
So here's a weird story. This is just a one-off weird story. It was on the news. About an Uber driver being shot dead? Listen to how this went down.
81-year-old William Brock charged in the murder of 61-year-old Uber driver Lolitha Hall. Authorities say Brock had received calls from scammers telling him a relative had been arrested, demanding $12,000 for bail, telling him a driver would stop by to pick up a package with the money. Authorities believe the same scammers directed that Uber driver to pick up a package at Brock's home without telling her what they had told the homeowner. Hall had no idea what she was walking into when she arrived, Brock then confronting her at gunpoint.
I was threatened that she was going to come and kill me.
Investigators say Brock took her cell phone, and when she tried to get in her car to get to safety, Brock stopped her from leaving, shooting her three times. Hall later died. In a statement, Uber saying this is a horrific tragedy and banning the account of the individual who made the request.
Authorities say they cannot stress enough law enforcement will never solicit cash. That should always be a red flag.
So my favorite part of this story is Uber announcing that they've canceled the account of the person that ordered the ride and made the phone call. That ended in a death.
We'll get to that eventually. I don't think that's the primary problem.
No, no, no. But good. I'm glad you canceled their account, though.
Wow, what a strange tale.
Isn't it? So what? Was that just mischief or evil? Did I miss something? What do you get out of that?
What does who get out of it?
The scammer.
The money.
But with
the money.
I guess they're hoping there's not a murder. Because, yeah.
Well, right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, they just thought the money had changed hands. Anyway, right. Speaking of people shooting each other, this was something, a harrowing experience for an elderly Idaho mother was ruled a heroic act after she shot and killed an intruder in her home. Listen to this, would you? This 85-year-old Idaho woman, Christine Janayan, her home was broken into by this 39-year-old scumbag who handcuffed her, threatened her with a gun repeatedly.
Oh, my God.
She lives in the home with her disabled son.
Oh, my God.
So, the intruder is wearing a military jacket and black ski mask, awakens her in the night, pointing a gun and flashlight at her before moving her into the living room. Blah, blah, blah. He handcuffed her to a chair.
This is nightmare stuff. Full-on nightmare stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So he handcuffs her to a chair after demanding to know where the valuables were kept in the home. Condon, that's the scumbag, the, spoiler alert, late scumbag, allegedly placed his pistol on the victim's head when she told him, "I don't have much, I'm not a wealthy person." She then told the home intruder about two safes downstairs, and the prosecutor says he left her handcuffed in the living room when he went to rummage through the home. Condon reportedly became angry when he found Janayan's son was in the home and she hadn't told him about it. The suspect is said to have made numerous threats to kill her. At one point, while he was downstairs trying to get her valuables, Christine dragged the chair she was handcuffed to into her bedroom and retrieved, a 357 Magnum revolver from under her pillow. She then went back into the living room, hid the revolver between the armrest and the cushion of a couch next to where she was seated and waiting to see what he did next. Blah, 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 blah. At some point, she decided now and never, pulled her gun and popped him, hit him twice. He emptied his 9mm pistol into her.
Wow.
She is going to survive, although at age 85, good Lord, the poor woman. But then he staggered into the adjoining kitchen where he died from his wounds.
Good. Man.
She laid on the floor for 10 hours until her disabled son found her and could give her her phone to call.
God, that's horrible. What terrible. A horrible story.
And this is not about criticizing the Bingham County Sheriff's Office, okay? There's a reason they felt like they had to say this. They called her a hero and said it was a justifiable homicide. Then for some reason, the Sheriff's Office noted that, quote, "though our intention is not to defame the name of the suspect involved, we are simply releasing the facts of the case and explaining that there was a victim involved that displayed heroism, fortitude, and a will to live that we'd be remiss not to share." So this kind of skips over something, but apparently they made the statement about this woman being a hero, and somebody said they were defaming the name of the suspect.
Screw them.
Yeah, I know. I know. I agreed completely. Worth mentioning, blue staters, Idaho's self-defense law states, quote, "no person in the state shall be placed in legal jeopardy of any kind whatsoever for protecting himself."
In different states, we learned that this from Trayvon Martin back in the day in Florida. What was that guy's name? The guy who shot Trayvon?
George Hernandez?
George. Seeing if I can come up with off the head. Don't look it up just yet, Katie. I want to see if I can figure it out. George. I keep wanting to say Santos, but it's not him. He probably has claimed he did it, but he didn't.
well played, sir. All right, hang on a second now. I can picture him.
I can, too. And then he got into more trouble later after shooting a kid dead.
Had a domestic scrape, as I recall.
Why can't I remember? Can you remember Michael?
The Jefferson?
No.
Michael.
You guys want a clue?
Don't be an ass.
A clue. What kind of...
No, not... it's too early for a clue. Okay. Now, I have every faith that you're a good clue giver, Katie. I know you that well.
It was the biggest story in America for a while, and President Obama weighed in, which gives you an idea how long ago it was. Costanza. That's funny. The Georges just keep popping into my head.
Washington.
Washington Carver, McGinnis.
Carver's Steakhouse.
Just not getting anywhere.
Curious George.
I would have never guessed that I would have forgotten that name. Iced tea and Skittles.
Give us your hint.
It starts with a Z.
Yep, Zimmerman.
Wow. Okay.
Right. Okay.
You win or something.
And that's fun. No. You know what's interesting about that is the way the brain works. I didn't have the name, but it's filed like in a filing cabinet, like the Dewey Decimal System in my brain. And
absolutely,
you give me the letter, and all of a sudden, okay, we can go to that file. There's only one name in it.
I will all the time, and I find this so interesting. I like can't come up with a name, for instance, that name, and I'll remember that there's a short E sound in it. I know there's an E in it. Oh, Hefner, that sort of thing. Happens all the time.
Well, yeah, I've tried to remember things before and go through all the sounds because you just can't go through the alphabet. You got to go through long and short. So I go A, B, B, C, D, E, and come up with it. I've done that many times in my life.
It's a little cumbersome. Yeah.
You want a story?
Thank you, sir.
Joe Biden continues to pander. This is a good one. So, made a lot of noise that, first of all, the WNBA draft got huge ratings the other night. Bigger than the NBA draft or the Major League Baseball draft? Only the NFL draft is bigger than what the WNBA draft was the other night because of Caitlin Clark. But then the news broke that her first year, after all this attention and all these ratings records and everything like that, her salary next year is going to be $76,535 a year. $76,000 a year. So they got a lot of topic about, you know, how it's unfair to women and everything like that. And, of course, Joe Biden had to weigh in here because here's an opportunity to appeal to whoever you appeal to. Joe Biden said, women in sports continue to push new boundaries, inspire us all. But right now we're seeing that even if you're the best, women are not paid their fair share. There's that term again.
It's people who don't understand economics is
even
just
a little bit.
Right.
And I'm about to give you the numbers, but don't understand it or even like have the brain capacity to think, I wonder how much the WNBA makes versus, say, the NBA. Well, you're about to find out. But anyway, he went on to say, women are not paid their fair share. It's time we give our daughters the same opportunities as our sons. And sure, women are paid what they deserve. Okay. Well,
they deserve, fair share, et cetera.
Do they deserve? And then you get the numbers. The WNBA currently makes $60 million a season. $60 million. The NBA makes $2.7 billion. Annually. Do you think that's got anything to do with the disparity in salaries? The NBA makes about $3 billion and spreads it around all these different things. The WNBA makes $60
million. Wow. Considering a billion is 1,000 million?
Now, there is disparity in like how much players get of contract. But, okay, fine. Maybe you want to even that out and negotiate that, somebody. But I mean, just the revenue coming in is you know, apples and oranges. Nice. So, of course.
Well, you're being kind of tough on Biden. I say we give him a chance to speak for himself. Michael, please, clip 42. Would you please, if you have a moment there?
You know, thanks to the mayor, Paige, excuse me, I was going to talk about the old mayor, would hold court around the kitchen table with a guy who was sort of the David Broder of the Pennsylvania Press, the Scranton Press. You think I'm kidding? It wasn't, but anyway. And he would they'd come and have breakfast at the table, and a kid could wander around the table where the adults were sitting, but you could never sit at the table. My grandfather would tell me when I walked out the door North Washington Avenue in Scranton.
I'm sorry, sir. This is a Wendy's, which is always my favorite line after things like that.
I don't think he should be the new or old mayor of Scranton. Never mind the president.
Hey, I'm not joking about that. Not joking about what?
We don't have any idea what you're talking about,
sir. At all.
Much less an opinion whether you're joking or not. So,
I can't,
the kids' table you were saying, what now?
I cannot ascertain the seriousness of your comments because I've lost the thread.
Yes, yes. It's more about the coherence than the humor that we're concerned, sir. Do we have any time for this? Yeah, a couple of other stories we're going to try to squeeze in. A bit of a loss. A federal court overturned West Virginia's law protecting women's sports from male intrusion. But that's one court, the Fourth Circuit, and that'll work its way through. The idea of boys and men playing in women's and girls' sports will soon be over because it's insane, untenable, and unjustifiable. But we've got to work our way through this idiotic process to get there. I like this one. I mentioned it. The Chinese Communist Party is subsidizing the manufacturing and exporting of illicit fentanyl precursor chemicals and other synthetic narcotics through tax rebates and other means, according to the House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party. Not only are they permitting it, they're subsidizing it to try to poison Americans. Our good buddies, the Chinese.
I remember saying that to somebody once, and they called me a conspiracy theorist that China's got anything to do with the fentanyl epidemic.
That is so odd. And one final Chinese China-related story. Former senior employee at TikTok said he was ordered to send American user data to Beijing-based parent ByteDance, contradicting TikTok's public claims of operating independently from China, according to Fortune. .com/magazine. Evan Turner, senior data scientist, said that every 2 weeks, TikTok had email spreadsheets containing millions of Americans' user data to ByteDance in Beijing, including the users' names, email addresses, IP addresses, and demographics. And he said he, quote, literally worked on a project that gave U.S. data to China, even though TikTok had launched Project Texas in March 22. You remember this? Promising U.S. officials that it would stop sharing American user data with its Chinese parent company and keep the data in U.S.-based data centers. As they were claimed that was up and running, they were ordering this guy to ship the data out every 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, I never believed that for a second.
And one more quote from him. There were Americans that were working in upper management that were completely complicit.
That's new. That's a slightly new piece of information.
Slap them in Leavenworth. Mm.
Yeah. Control your soul's desire for freedom.
Control your soul's desire for freedom. That's what Chinese drones with loudspeakers were telling people locked in their homes during COVID.
Control your soul's desire for freedom.
I'm starving is the thing.
They, Russia and China, want to take over the world and make everybody live like that. And they could if the U.S. world order goes away. That's what's at stake. Anyway, we will finish strong next.
Armstrong and Getty.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, Joe just mentioned during the commercial break, I talked about this earlier, the way it's raining in the Middle East and some of the Arab countries, Dubai is underwater. Like, their airport and all the cars in the street and everything like that are underwater, and so is Oman. I assume it's in that area. My brother spent a fair amount of time in Dubai and places like that in the military, and says they're just unbelievable. I'm sure they are, because everything's brand new and they have very strict laws. I mean, you're not going to have any homeless street people or trash anywhere, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'd like to visit that part of the world just to see it.
But, so I was wondering about the rain. Just thought, oh, it's one of those weather phenomenon. Sometimes you get floods or whatever. They were doing heavy cloud seeding over there, and this has been the result. Kind of a delayed result. So, what does that do to the, like, throwing off the whole atmosphere? Because those clouds were gathering moisture in a natural way to go somewhere and rain sometime. Does that all get thrown out of whack? I mean, does that affect, you know, Nebraska at some point? Or?
I don't know.
Almost finished. Let's get ready. Final thoughts with Armstrong and Getty.
Awesome. Thank you. Here's your host for Final Thoughts, Joe Getty.
Let's get a final thought from everybody on the crew to wrap things up for the day. There he is, pressing the buttons, Michelangelo. Michael!
We're talking about radio industry injuries. Most of mine have been emotional. I haven't had a lot of physical ones, just a lot of you stink, that type of thing.
I've apologized many times, Michael. Quit bringing it up. Katie Greener, esteemed newswoman, has a final thought. Katie?
I've experienced this a couple of times in the last month. If you're one of those people that hums or sings when you're using a public bathroom, stop it.
Oh, wow. Wow. See, for fellas, it's talks to guy and next urinal guy.
Hums or sings.
Oh, woman was in a full-blown musical yesterday. And I'm going, why?
Wow. Jack, a final thought?
Yeah, we're talking about insurance possibly covering these weight loss drugs and then becoming way, way, way more prevalent. I don't want to go that route, but like I was super disciplined the last couple of days, denied myself any pleasure whatsoever food-wise, and I've gotten nothing out of it.
So sorry. Gobble down some Wegovy.
Armstrong and Getty wrapping up another grueling four-hour workday.
No time for my final thought, unfortunately. Y'all hogged the mic so long. Damn it. Go to ArmstrongandGetty.com. Got a lot of great clicks under hot links. Pick up some swag. Drop us a note. Mailbag at ArmstrongandGetty.com is the email address.
See you tomorrow. God bless America.
Armstrong and Getty.
Armstrong Getty, you can't hide. You prefer your chicken fried. How about that one? No?
Everybody was as moved as I felt by that.
That's not right.
I expected more.
Let's not go through this again.
Okay.
Yay. So let's go out with a bang.
Uh-oh, Armstrong Getty, you can't hide. Joe has had both tubes tied.
Wow.
On that high note, thank you all very much.
Armstrong and Getty.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.